Chapter 46. Poor Mrs. Alden. I confess she frightened me a little. She was one of those natures, rare enough, luckily, in which one cannot help being interested, because they provoke both terror and pity. One dreads their contact for oneself, and still more for those one cares for, so clear it is that they are born to suffer, and to make others suffer too. It is strange to think that, I won't say liberty, but the mere liberalism of outlook which for us is a matter of words, of ambitions, of votes, and if of feeling at all, then of the sort of feeling which leaves our deepest affections untouched, may be for other beings very much like ourselves, and living under the same sky, a heavy trial of fortitude, a matter of tears and anguish and blood. Mrs. Alden had felt the pangs of her own generation. There was that enthusiast brother of hers, the officer they shot under Nicholas. A faintly ironic resignation is no armor for a vulnerable heart. Mrs. Alden, struck at through her children, was bound to suffer afresh from the past, and to feel the anguish of the future. She was of those who do not know how to heal themselves, of those who are too much aware of their heart, who, neither cowardly nor selfish, look passionately at its wounds and count the cost. Such thoughts as these seasoned my modest lonely bachelor's meal. If anybody wishes to remark that this was a roundabout way of thinking of Natalia Alden, I can only retort that she was well worth some concern, as he had all her life before her. Let it be admitted, then, that I was thinking of Natalia Alden's life in terms of her mother's character, a manner of thinking about a girl permissible for an old man, not too old yet to have become a stranger to pity. There was almost all her youth before her, a youth robbed arbitrarily of its natural lightness and joy, overshadowed by an un-European despotism. A terribly somber youth given over to the hazards of a furious strife between equally ferocious antagonisms. I lingered over my thoughts more than I should have done. One felt so helpless, and even worse so unrelated, in a way. At the last moment I hesitated, as to going there at all. What was the good? The evening was already advanced when, turning into the Boulevard des Philosophes, I saw the light in the window at the corner. The blind was down, but I could imagine behind it Mrs. Alden seated in the chair, in her usual attitude, looking out for someone, which had lately acquired the poignant quality of mad expectation. I thought that I was sufficiently authorized by the light to knock at the door. The ladies had not retired as yet. I only hoped they would not have any visitors of their own nationality. A broken-down, retired Russian official was to be found there sometimes in the evening. He was infinitely forlorn and wearisome by his mere dismal presence. I think these ladies tolerated his frequent visits, because of an ancient friendship with Mr. Alden, the father, or something of that sort. I made up my mind that if I found him prosing away there in his feeble voice I should remain but a very few minutes. The door surprised me by swinging open, before I could ring the bell. I was confronted by Miss Alden, in hat and jacket, obviously on the point of going out. At that hour. For the doctor, perhaps? Her exclamation of welcome reassured me. It sounded as if I had been the very man she wanted to see. My curiosity was awakened. She drew me in, and the faithful Anna, the elderly German maid, closed the door, but did not go away afterwards. She remained near it, as if in readiness, to let me out presently. It appeared that Miss Alden had been on the point of going out to find me. She spoke in a hurried manner very unusual with her. She would have gone straight, and rung at Mrs. Ziegler's door, late as it was, for Mrs. Ziegler's habits. Mrs. Ziegler, the widow of a distinguished professor who was an intimate friend of mine, lets me have 3 rooms out of her very large and fine apartment, which she didn't give up after her husband's death, but I have my own entrance opening on the same landing. It was an arrangement of at least 10 years' standing. I said that I was very glad that I had the idea to. Miss Alden made no motion to take off her outdoor things. I observed her heightened color, something pronouncedly resolute in her tone. Did I know where Mr. Razumov lived? Where Mr. Razumov lived? Mr. Razumov? At this hour so urgently? I threw my arms up in sign of utter ignorance. I had not the slightest idea where he lived. If I could have foreseen her question only 3 hours ago, I might have ventured to ask him on the pavement before the new post office building, and possibly he would have told me, but very possibly too, he would have dismissed me rudely, to mind my own business. And possibly, I thought, remembering that extraordinary alias and anguished and absent expression, he might have fallen down in a fit from the shock of being spoken to. I said nothing of all this to Miss Alden, not even mentioning that I had a glimpse of the young man so recently. The impression had been so extremely unpleasant that I would have been glad to forget it myself. I don't see where I could make inquiries, I murmured helplessly. I would have been glad to be of use in any way, and would have set off to fetch any man, young or old, for I had the greatest confidence in her common sense. Had made you think of coming to me for that information? I asked. It wasn't exactly for that, she said, in a low voice. As he had the air of someone confronted by an unpleasant task. Am I to understand that you must communicate with Mr. Razumov this evening? Natalia Alden moved her head affirmatively. Then, after a glance at the door of the drawing room, said in French, "Qu'est-ce que maman?" and remained perplexed for a moment. All was serious, not a girl to be put out by any imaginary difficulties. My curiosity was suspended on her lips, which remained closed for a moment. What was Mr. Razumov's connection with this mention of her mother? Mrs. Alden had not been informed of her son's friend's arrival in Geneva. May I hope to see your mother this evening? I inquired. Miss Alden extended her hand, as if to bar the way. She is in a terrible state of agitation. Oh, you would not be able to detect. It's inward, but I who know mother, I am appalled. I haven't the courage to face it any longer. It's all my fault. I suppose I cannot play a part. I've never before hidden anything from mother. There has never been an occasion for anything of that sort between us. But you know yourself the reason why I refrained from telling her at once of Mr. Razumov's arrival here. You understand, don't you? Owing to her unhappy state. And there I am no actress. My own feelings being strongly engaged, I somehow... I don't know. She noticed something in my manner. She thought I was concealing something from her. She noticed my longer absences, and, in fact, as I have been meeting Mr. Razumov daily, I used to stay away longer than usual when I went out. Goodness knows what suspicions arose in her mind. You know that she has not been herself ever since. So this evening she who has been so awfully silent for weeks began to talk all at once. She said that she did not want to reproach me, that I had my character as he had her own, that she did not want to pry into my affairs, or even into my thoughts. For her part, as he had never had anything to conceal from her children. Cruel things to listen to. And all this in her quiet voice, with that poor, wasted face as calm as a stone. It was unbearable. Miss Alden talked in an undertone, and more rapidly than I had ever heard her speak before. That in itself was disturbing. The anteroom being strongly lighted, I could see under the veil the heightened color of her face. She stood erect, her left edge, and was resting lightly on a small table. The other hung by her side without stirring. Now and then she caught her breath slightly. It was too startling. Just fancy. She thought that I was making preparations to leave her without saying anything. I knelt by the side of her chair and entreated her to think of what she was saying. She put her hand on my head, but she persists in her delusion all the same. As he had always thought that she was worthy of her children's confidence, but apparently it was not so. Her son could not trust her love, nor yet her understanding, and now I was planning to abandon her in the same cruel and unjust manner, and so on, and so on. Nothing I could say. It is morbid obstinacy. She said that she felt there was something, some change in me. If my convictions were calling me away, why this secrecy, as though as he had been a coward, or a weakling not safe to trust? As if my heart could play traitor to my children, apostrophe she said. It was hardly to be borne. And she was smoothing my head all the time. It was perfectly useless to protest. She is ill. Her very soul is. I did not venture to break the silence which fell between us. I looked into her eyes, glistening through the veil. I changed, she exclaimed in the same low tone. Why convictions calling me away? It was cruel to hear this, because my trouble is that I am weak, and cannot see what I ought to do. You know that. And to end it all I did a selfish thing. To remove her suspicions of myself I told her of Mr. Razumov. It was selfish of me. You know we were completely right in agreeing to keep the knowledge away from her. Perfectly right. Directly I told her of our poor Victor's friend being here I saw how right we have been. She ought to have been prepared. But in my distress I just blurted it out. Mother got terribly excited at once. How long has he been here? What did he know, and why did he not come to see us at once, this friend of her Victor? What did that mean? Was she not to be trusted even with such memories as there were left of her son? Just think how I felt seeing her, white like a sheet, perfectly motionless, with her thin hands gripping the arms of the chair. I told her it was all my fault. I could imagine the motionless dumb figure of the mother in her chair, there, behind the door, near which the daughter was talking to me. The silence in there seemed to call aloud for vengeance against an historical fact, and the modern instances of its working. That view flashed through my mind, but I could not doubt that Miss Alden had had an atrocious time of it. I quite understood when she said that she could not face the night upon the impression of that scene. Mrs. Alden had given way to most awful imaginings, to most fantastic and cruel suspicions. All this had to be lulled at all costs, and without loss of time. It was no shock to me to learn that Miss Alden had said to her, I will go and bring him here at once. There was nothing absurd in that cry, no exaggeration of sentiment. I was not even doubtful in my very well, but how? It was perfectly right that she should think of me, but what could I do in my ignorance of Mr. Razumov's quarters? And to think he may be living nearby, within a stone's throw, perhaps. She exclaimed. I doubted it, but I would have gone off cheerfully, to fetch him from the other end of Geneva. I suppose she was certain of my readiness, since her first thought was to come to me. But the service she meant to ask of me really was to accompany her to the Chateau Borel. I had an unpleasant mental vision of the dark road, of the somber grounds, and the desolately suspicious aspect of that home of necromancy and intrigue and feminist adoration. I objected that Madame de S. most likely would know nothing of what we wanted to find out. Neither did I think it likely that the young man would be found there. I remembered my glimpse of his face, and somehow gained the conviction that a man who looked worse than if he had seen the dead would want to shut himself up somewhere where he could be alone. I felt a strange certitude that Mr. Razumov was going home when I saw him. It is really of Peter Ivanovich that I was thinking, said Miss Alden quietly. Ah! He, of course, would know. I looked at my watch. It was 9:20 only. Still. I would try his hotel, then, I advised. He has rooms at the Cosmopolitan, somewhere on the top floor. I did not offer to go by myself, simply from mistrust of the reception I should meet with. But I suggested the faithful Anna, with a note asking for the information. Anna was still waiting by the door at the other end of the room, and we two discussed the matter in whispers. Miss Alden thought she must go herself. Anna was timid and slow. Time would be lost in bringing back the answer, and from that point of view it was getting late, for it was by no means certain that Mr. Razumov lived nearby. If I go myself, Miss Alden argued, I can go straight to him from the hotel. And in any case I should have to go out, because I must explain to Mr. Razumov personally, prepare him in a way. You have no idea of Mother's state of mind. Her color came and went. She even thought that both for her mother's sake, and for her own, it was better that they should not be together for a little time. Anna, whom her mother liked, would be at hand. She could take her sewing into the room, Miss Alden continued, leading the way to the door. Then, addressing in German the maid who opened it before us, you may tell my mother that this gentleman called and is gone with me to find Mr. Razumov. She must not be uneasy if I am away for some length of time. We passed out quickly into the street, and she took deep breaths of the cool night air. Did not even ask you, she murmured. I should think not, I said, with a laugh. The manner of my reception by the great feminist could not be considered now. That he would be annoyed to see me, and probably treat me to some solemn insolence, I had no doubt, but I supposed that he would not absolutely dare to throw me out. And that was all I cared for. Aunt, you take my arm? I asked. She did so in silence, and neither of us said anything worth recording till I let her go first into the great hall of the hotel. It was brilliantly lighted, and with a good many people lounging about. I could very well go up there without you, I suggested. I don't like to be left waiting in this place, she said in a low voice. I will come too. I led her straight to the lift then. At the top floor the attendant directed us to the right colon end of the corridor. The walls were white, the carpet red, electric lights blazed in profusion, and the emptiness, the silence, the closed doors all alike and numbered, made me think of the perfect order of some severely luxurious model penitentiary on the solitary confinement principle. Up there under the roof of that enormous pile for housing travelers no sound of any kind reached us, the thick crimson felt muffled our footsteps completely. We hastened on, not looking at each other till we found ourselves before the very last door of that long passage. Then our eyes met, and we stood thus for a moment, lending ear to a faint murmur of voices inside. I suppose this is it, I whispered unnecessarily. I saw Miss Alden's lips move without a sound, and after my sharp knock the murmur of voices inside ceased. A profound stillness lasted for a few seconds, and then the door was brusquely opened by a short, black-eyed woman in a red blouse, with a great lot of nearly white hair, done up negligently in an untidy and unpicturesque manner. Her thin, jetty eyebrows were drawn together. I learned afterwards with interest that she was the famous or the notorious Sofia Antonovna, but I was struck then by the quaint Mephistophelian character of her inquiring glance, because it was so curiously evil-less, so I may say undevilish. It got softened still more as she looked up at Miss Alden, who stated, in her rich, even voice, her wish to see Peter Ivanovich for a moment. I am Miss Alden, she added. At this, with her brow completely smoothed out now, but without a word in answer, the woman in the red blouse walked away to a sofa and sat down, leaving the door wide open. And from the sofa, her hands lying on her lap, she watched us enter, with her black, glittering eyes. Miss Alden advanced into the middle of the room. I, faithful to my part of mere attendant, remained by the door, after closing it behind me. The room, quite a large one, but with a low ceiling, was scantily furnished, and an electric bulb with a porcelain shade pulled low down over a big table with a very large map spread on it, left its distant parts in a dim, artificial twilight. Peter Ivanovich was not to be seen, neither was Mr. Razumov present. But, on the sofa, near Sofia Antonovna, a bony-faced man with a goatee beard leaned forward with his hands on his knees, staring hard with a kindly expression. In a remote corner a broad, pale face and a bulky shape could be made out, uncouth, an and as if insecure on the low seat on which it rested. The only person known to me was little Julius Lascara, who seemed to have been poring over the map, his feet twined tightly around the chair legs. He got down briskly, and bowed to Miss Alden, looking absurdly like a hooknosed boy with a beautiful false pepper and salt beard. He advanced, offering his seat, which Miss Alden declined. As he had only come in for a moment, to say a few words to Peter Ivanovich. His high-pitched voice became painfully audible in the room. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.